All right, welcome to episode 26 of the Sunday Conversation podcast presented by FingerLakes1.com. Our guest this week is Ian Smith, who was named Seneca Lake Watershed Steward earlier this year. Ian, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Josh.
Okay, so before we sort of get into your background and how you sort of found yourself in this line of work, walk us through what a watershed steward does.
Well, that's a pretty broad topic. Basically, anything related to water quality concerns around the lake is what I do. Like you said, it's a pretty new, it's a first time position, new endeavor. So a little bit of it's just defining what it is exactly, but largely just keeping an eye on any water quality concerns and then finding ways to address them as they develop, either in the future or remediating past issues, whatever it might be.
And how much of a challenge is that, just in terms of the size and scope of Seneca Lake versus some of the other Finger Lakes, where maybe it might be a little easier?
Yeah, the scale is definitely a large challenge. It's 40 municipalities. You know, the lake's I think 38 miles long with over 70 miles of shoreline. So it's a large space to get a handle on. And it's not just the geographical scope, it's the sort of landscape scope too. You know, you've got different topography, you've got cities like Geneva that have hard pavement, you've got a lot of agricultural communities, you know. So it's a lot of things to get your mind around, for sure.
And sort of how do you approach the day-to-day in being able to sort of take all of those different factors, and we'll talk more about that as we go through this, but how do you sort of approach the day-to-day so that you're able to account for all of those things and sort of keep your head in the right space?
Day-to-day, it's too big to try to focus on everything all the time. There's sort of the way I approach it is you've got your long-term endeavors and your short-term endeavors. So for example, I was brought in initially to work on the 9-element plan, which is the shorter watershed-based plan we're developing. And that's, you know, a long-term project, 3 years, 4 years, that'll guide what we do for the next decade plus. But you also need to be able to respond to short-term concerns, like if there's a release in the DEC Environmental News Bulletin that you may want to have a comment on, be able to respond to people's concerns. You got to be able to adapt when those short-term issues come up, get yourself educated on that, and then respond accordingly. So it's a little bit of focusing long-term on the day-to-day, but being able to respond to the short-term when they do develop.
Mm-hmm. So. And when you talk about that 9-element plan, probably a pretty significant part of what you're working on that day-to-day. What are some of the goals of that plan, and just sort of what's the end mission look like in terms of keeping Seneca Lake healthy and the watershed healthy long-term?
Yeah, so the 9-element plan is a framework developed by the EPA that addresses these 9 elements that they've identified as being successful to a watershed-based plan. There's this 9-element process you work your way through, and ultimately the goal is to come up with a strong framework for getting to an end goal. So if our end goal is some level of environmental protection effort that sustains water quality but allows for some level of habitation, it'll quantify that and then develop a framework on how to get to that end point. That's really the goal behind the 9-element. Unlike previous watershed plan systems, it's really quantifiable. So it's not narrative, so it's more technical in the way it's developed. That makes it harder to get through the process because it has a rigorous component, but it also sets less emotional justifications for actions. So.
Is taking the emotion out of sort of some of these environmental issues maybe one of the more important components of just trying to deal with them?
Yes and no. I mean, the nice thing about quantifying is it does eliminate the sort of, you know, conflicts can develop between user groups, but you don't want to make it too technical and too hard to relate because, you know, something like Seneca Lake, there's an emotional attachment to it. So you don't want to completely eliminate that because that inspires people to actually take action. So it's trying to find a balance of those two things. And one of the nice things about Seneca Lake is that it's not what they call impaired. So it's still functioning in the way that it's been classified as a public resource. So we have a little bit of flexibility in where our end goals are. So you get a little bit of that emotional value and input into it, but at the same time, the way you define that endpoint that's based on people's interest and how they value the system, it has a quantifiable target to sustain that value.
And one of the more common questions, especially obviously HAB season, many more what people might think is a harmful algae bloom anytime they see something floating in the water. One of the common questions that we see coming into our inboxes and of course on social media is the lake safe? Is the lake healthy? What's sort of the go-to assessment that you all sort of provide to people who might be curious or just concerned about what Seneca Lake is right now?
Well, the biggest thing around the question of is the lake or any lake healthy is, especially when it comes to biological activity like algal growth, is what do you want the lake to be? You know, there's these classifications of different kinds of lakes based on the biological activity. So if the goal is to maintain Seneca as a low nutrient, like clear water, low biological systems that support cold water fisheries, then there are some trends that are concerning, like the HABs issue. But there are other systems where you have higher, you know, biological activity. There's, you know, bass fishing and a lot of algal growth, a lot of vegetation growth. So it's a little bit of what do you see the lake being? Where do you want it to be? But as far as is it safe or not, I think in general, yeah, Seneca is in pretty good shape, and there's definitely some improvements. I was just at the wastewater treatment plant at Geneva a couple of days ago and saw an aerial photo taken in 1934. You can see an oil slick on one part of the town. You can see the discharge from sewage in another part of town, and you can see a landfill where the canal used to be at the north. So it's loads better than it was, without question. But that doesn't mean there aren't still concerns, particularly as we see it more of as a recreational resource where people are in contact with it, eating the fish out of it, mm-hmm. versus, you know, a disposal system back in the day.
Right.
So, yeah.
And how much unknown is sort of attached to lake health overall in terms of scientists and experts are still trying to figure out different components of all of these different things to figure out what is what when they're going through making measurements and things like that?
Yeah, it's hard. Like the HABs issue in and of itself has a lot of question marks around it. You know, there's all sorts of things that contribute to an harmful algal bloom. Nutrients, sunlight penetration into the water, you know, the presence of zebra mussels that preferentially feed on other kinds of algae, allowing blue-green algae to proliferate. I mean, there's all sorts of things that we're still trying to get our head around and understand exactly what causes stuff to happen. And then, you know, there are a lot of things that we haven't even looked at yet. We know the Seneca Army Depot, where they made munitions, has some concerns that no one's really even barely begun to look at. So with over, I don't even know how many chemical compounds are in existence these days, over thousands, that we don't really have a good handle on the impacts to the system. So yeah, there's so many things to look at that it's hard to identify everything that's a potential concern.
Does it lend itself to the argument that perhaps there's too much focus on HABs and maybe a little too much concern around that specific area when there are probably many, 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 many other direct concerns for a lake like Seneca or any body of water in general?
Yeah, there's definitely an argument for that. You know, the issue around HABs is it's so instantaneous, it's so short term. You know, it can cause such a big impact right when it happens, mm-hmm. Versus more long term concerns like, I don't know, heavy metals concentration. You know, that's something that builds up, bioaccumulates, and like mercury, bioaccumulates in fish over time. Where our nature is to sort of respond to the immediate impacts that we can see and cause short-term concerns versus long-term trends like nutrient load and metal load and these things that can take decades to develop concerns that, you know, if it happens slow enough, you don't even notice it until it's potentially too late, and then it takes a long time to remediate and then have an effect on it too. So yeah, it's a bit of a keeping your eye on these short-term impacts versus these long-term sustained impacts.
And does that sort of shape how you have to, when you take on a role like the one you're in now, does that shape how you sort of have to game plan and goal your own efforts over, year, 2 year, 3 year, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, right now, what's really driving interest and concern and effort is HABs. So you do need to focus towards that direction because it is what's galvanizing and what's driving purpose. But that doesn't mean you can take your eyes off longer things, longer term things that you may want to address. For example, one of the things that's of interest to me is just the classification system around waterways. You have the lake itself is a drinking water source for the town we're sitting in and for others. But you also have the water, some a lot of the waterways that feed into it have a completely different level of classification. So how can you marry, how can you marry those two diametric opposite situations long term? You're going to have to figure out how to do that. Or you're just not going to be able to sustain one versus the other, in my opinion.
How does something like that happen? Obviously, you're talking about something that happens over many, 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 many years, where those two sort of opposites are allowed to exist together. How does that happen? And then how does something like that, where the classification system, how does something like that get addressed or changed? And how much of a challenge that would, your expression tells me that that would be one hell of an undertaking.
That is one heck of an undertaking. It gets us when so when streams were classified, they were classified based on their existing use. And I'm not familiar enough with New York yet to know when that happened. My guess would be around the Clean Water Act in the 70s, but I could be wrong. And once you establish that classification, it's a major hassle to try to change it. And you can sort of get it, like the Keuka outlet. There's obviously large scale industry along that at one point. Nowadays, it's a recreational resource. So is it really in our best benefit to maintain it as a industrial area? I don't know. That's something we as a community have to decide. But as far as if you do want to change something like that, how do you go about doing it? Well, you have to get the state to do it, and it's going to take probably a decade. Skaney Atlas did do this, and it took them, I think, around 7 to 10 years to get it done. And that's a much smaller area. So, yeah, that doing something like that would be a major uphill battle for sure.
So, some folks have been critical of the efforts so far of New York State with regard to the HABs problem. How do you sort of see it as someone who lives this every day? Is the state doing as much as they can, or do you think there's some opportunity to do some different things, or is it just one of those issues where the state's basically put in a reactive situation where they are reacting to something that's been happening for a number of years now?
Yeah, I can't say whether they acted in a timely manner or not. As far as the process of how they're addressing it, that's tough. It's a widespread issue. We have a lot of lakes. Where do they focus their effort? That's always going to leave one community benefiting another not. I don't relish the position having to do that. And then, like I said, there's this dual interest where you want to understand the situation better, so you need to put effort towards, scientific endeavors monitoring that don't necessarily directly produce a reduction in it, but you have to better understand how it's happening. At the same time, people want to see efforts that actually produce a result. So they have been directing money towards on the ground projects, on the septic replacement funds. Soil water conservation districts do a lot of work with farmers to reduce runoff. Where exactly that money is being spent, how it's being spent. They give you big numbers, but I don't know how exactly how it goes. Maybe it's all through the CFA process. I don't know. But yeah, it's a hard balance, and I don't know if it's the best approach or not, but I don't relish them having to figure that out.
Oftentimes when we see this discussion happen, or when we see the community sort of talk about this issue, whether it's the Habs or whether it's Lake Health, there tend to be sort of hot points where people tend to focus their energy. Do you see this as more of a widespread community-wide problem, as opposed to sort of, well, it's Ag's fault, or well, it's because of a landfill here, or well, it's because of this specific thing here? It sounds like it's almost so broad, Lake Health in general. There's so many potential factors contributing to it that it would have to be a really community-wide cause and effect situation.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of depends on, a lot of it depends on what exactly you're trying to reduce, the pollutant that you're trying to eliminate. In the case of nutrients, it comes from everywhere. Yeah. So it really is a community effort. We're all in this together. You know, it is a shared resource with all of us in the watershed contributing to some degree. What that is, I mean, the nine element is designed to quantify that for a reason, so that you can actually figure out where the sources and levels are. But there's no question that every single person is contributing to some degree or another. Mm-hmm. So we can all do little things to help solve the problem.
And sort of on the personal side, when did it click for you that this sort of the environmental side of the world was where you wanted to focus your energy and to sort of take your own professional career?
That's a little, boy, there's not a moment. So I grew up in a pretty interesting spot. So I grew up right along the Continental Divide in Maryland. So on one side of the mountain was the Chesapeake Bay drainage, mm-hmm. which, you know, some people may be familiar. There's been a huge decades-long process to trying to clean up the bay, and that's the same situation here. It's nutrients, excessive levels of nutrients that we're trying to address. But on the other side of the drain of the mountain was coal country. And there, it's a totally different framework. It's all about excessive metals in the waterways and the pH problems that creates. So that's what got me sort of interested in it when I was younger, because I grew up on a small lake that had both of those issues. And you know, we had farming, but we also had historical mining that had, so you had the dual system impacting our waterway, and the conversation around it, especially when it was a man-made lake, so it was privately held. The state bought it when I was, I don't know, sometime in my teens, and that changed the conversation entirely because it became a public resource. Mm-hmm. Well, ownership became public at that point, and everyone had an opinion on what we should do with it, and that's sort of what got me interested.
How do you navigate that part of it? Because it does seem like no matter where or what you're talking about, everybody does have an opinion, sure. Especially when you're talking about solutions. But they're very complicated, as you've sort of alluded to so far. How do you navigate that part of it and allow everyone to feel included, but at the same time to be able to sort of weed through what might just be some noise and some concerns that may not be as fully vetted as what science has?
That's sort of the million-dollar question when it comes to public resources. Everyone's got a different purpose in mind when they see a public resource. Some people are interested from a purely recreational standpoint. You know, in the case of Seneca Lake, water supply, that's I think of value to everyone, I would think. There's no answer to that. Science wants to quantify and eliminate the sort of soft science of things, the soft value of things, but you can't do that. That's the challenge. That's the challenge we face, and that's also what makes it intriguing to me, because it isn't this privately held thing, mm-hmm. where one group, one person, one company, or whatever gets to decide what to do with it. The interesting thing is, because it is shared, there are so many interests, so many people, so many voices, that it creates a sort of, I don't know, a conversation that's intriguing and of interest to me personally.
So I think back to the debate around Crestwood Midstream, the southern end of Seneca Lake. And it seems like there is frequently this sort of two sides of any of these environmental water related issues. You have the folks who say, we need jobs, we need this, we need industry, we need that. And then you have the folks who say, we need to focus, as you're saying, on the recreation, the tourism, and the people who are using the lake for what a lot of other folks call fun.
Sure.
But obviously drinking water is a big part of that as well. How divisive is that part of it? And how much of what you're doing is trying to insert all of the rest? Because there's a lot of space, there's a lot of latitude between those two points. And it sounds like that's where you're kind of trying to shove information in so people see a little more.
Right. I mean, I'm not an economist, so I can't tell you the sort of job impact on economic preservation, on environmental preservation. But there, so like I said, I came from Maryland. There's a lot of information studies that have shown that by reducing the nutrients and sustaining the fisheries there, you sustain jobs, you sustain a market there that you otherwise would have lost. Does that balance out? Some studies say yes, some studies say no. That's, you know, economics for you.
Yeah.
but the challenge with jobs is it's always speculative,
right?
You know, and does one industry support one job and then and another industry support a different, and they're not cohabitable? I don't think that's a choice you always have to make. I mean, there's no question that a part of the value of this area is our agricultural tourism component, like wineries, dairies, the local mm-hmm. food movement. No one wants to see, we already know how hard it is on farmers to make a living right now, especially with, you know, the trade issues. So, I mean, no one wants to see that side of the community struggle more than they have to. But there's we also know that there's an additional value around, you know, recreational. I mean, the property tax situation, I mean, I haven't had a time to delve into the property tax role yet, but I think it can safely be said that there's a higher value of lakeshore versus not. So you don't want to lose that sort of component to our area either. So I mean, I'm not an economist. I can't answer that question sufficiently for you.
Certainly
know?
Not asking you to be one.
Yeah.
But I will ask you this, because we have seen a pretty significant outpouring of support from local municipalities, local leaders, in this sort of broader effort to create a coalition and to preserve not just the environment, but lakes like Seneca. What has that support been like for you as you enter into this role and then try to start tackling some of the things that are coming before you?
Well, it's been a huge boon for me just in the short time I've been here. It's helped me just try to start to get a handle on the different communities and the different issues that we're facing. Like I said, I was doing work in coal country, you know, really small towns, small populations. There's not a whole lot of feedback available to you in those sort of environments. Here, there's so much energy, so much interest. That's been real galvanizing personally. It just keeps you going every single day. The challenge, of course, is all that energy means there's also a lot of people that come to you, and you try to balance everyone's, you know, sort of time. They all want it. They all want some yeah. of your time. You only have so much to give and be effective.
You are only one person.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. but I mean, it's been a huge boon, because a large component is just trying to educate myself around all the issues that we are trying to tackle. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it gives me avenues to reach out and try to develop communications two ways. So that it's been one of the most exciting things and one of the reasons that brought me here, for sure.
And my last question is sort of a broad one and speculative, of course, and a lot can change. But as you look at Seneca Lake over the next 3, 5, 7, 10 years, what are some of the things that you're watching, and what are a couple of the things that really give you some optimism about the direction that the lake is headed?
Well, the optimism is definitely a couple things. Interest. There's no question that everyone's becoming aware around the concern. So that's one large thing. You don't have to fight people to be part of the conversation, because everyone knows it's happening, is interested in participating in that conversation. some other things is there's a lot of work already on the ground. I think there's a little confusion around, because we are promoting this nine element thing so heavily, that, you know, oh, it's another plan. Well, there's a lot of projects on the ground too that we're simultaneously pursuing, either ourselves, SWIL ourselves, or the Soil and Water Conservation Districts, some of the lake associations. There's a lot of different groups, and this is, you know, one of the things you hear is like, are you, you know, there's a little confusion over who's doing what, and I get that, because there's a lot of different interests. But there's a lot of stuff happening, so there's a lot of energy, a lot of progress forward, and I think, especially once we get the nine element plan, that opens up a really good framework to move forward and accesses funding streams that we don't currently have, that'll just exponentially improve the way that we can make progress. So all those things are really satisfying. I forget the other part of your question there.
Well, I kind of want to expand on one point in there that you brought up in terms of just how many different players are involved. Yeah. How important is that part of it? Because obviously, some folks might think that if one agency were doing all of it, that it would be more organized, that it would be better, that it would be this, that, or the other thing. But really having a broader coalition of folks working toward this single goal, preserving the local environment, the Seneca Lake, it really will be easier to achieve in the long term, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So there are a lot of groups, but they all have sort of a little different function. The SWIO, that's a municipal organization. It's composed of a municipality, so there's obviously a government component to that. Mm-hmm. There's Seneca Lake Pure Waters Association. That's private, you know, just volunteer-based, mostly lakefront people, but not always. There's some other people just in the watershed. They have a whole different avenue that they can operate in because they are a nonprofit, non-government organization. Then you've got Soil Water Conservation Districts. They have great working relationships with the farm community. They're doing great work there. If you have one single agency, I'm not sure that it could develop the sort of expertise in certain realms and the sort of relationships in certain realms to really get a lot of stuff done. I think by focusing in different areas while maintaining partnerships among these different groups is the best way to get things done, because it gives you more flexibility and more areas to operate. I just think, I mean, one of the things that personally, when it comes to shared resources, the local community is always going to have a better understanding and stronger connection to that resource than someone that's, you know, further away and doesn't have that direct emotional connection. That their only understanding of it may be a number, a quantifiable number. So personally, I don't think having some remote enterprise speaking for this resource is the way to preserve it.
So when you hear from different folks who have concerns, and maybe they throw the question to you, how can I get involved, or what can I do? What are some, how do you direct folks who want to help, who want to be part of the solution, to sort of get that energy going in the right way?
Boy, we could be here all day on that. there's a couple of different things. So let's start with the most basic thing, pollution prevention. How do you do that? Pollution into a water body is through two ways. There's the source of the pollution, and there's the transport of it. It all comes down to that. Those are the two mechanisms on how pollution gets there. So one super simple thing around excessive nutrients, reduce the amount of nutrients you're using. So let's say, for example, I don't know, you have a yard. Let's say you have a house with a yard. Do you need to use fertilizer? There's free to $10 soil tests from Cornell Cooperative Extensions. They can tell you, do you actually need to spend money on buying fertilizer? There's one simple thing. As far as how it gets to the lake, make some sort of effort to reduce the amount of runoff. So instead of having a gutter directly from your roof into your yard, maybe put a rain bale on it. You know, the Soil Water Conservation Districts do rain bale workshops pretty regularly during the summer, and you can walk out the door with a rain bale for $20. Well, don't quote me on that one, but I think that's about right. As far as assisting with the effort and understanding what's going on, Pure Waters has an incredible volunteer monitoring effort around all sorts of stuff. And it's actually one of the nation's best examples. I think they have I don't know the exact number, but it's over 100 people this year helping them doing HABS monitoring along the shore. That's an enormous effort on everyone's part, and it's all volunteer based, and they have a few tiny little gaps along the shoreline, but for the most part they've got 80% coverage. So another dozen people, maybe we could get 100% coverage. Mm-hmm. There's a great way to do safety, you know, around HABS. The Nine Element Plan it's a voluntary, and this is really important for people to understand. A total maximum daily load is the same sort of framework as a Nine Element Plan. One is regulatory, one is not. A Nine Element Plan is not a regulatory action. It is a voluntary plan and program. So it's really important that we get a lot of people to engage and participate and share their interests and concerns around the sort of projects and long-term planning that we're going to be developing. Because because it is voluntary, people have to buy in to actually implement the things that it lays out and suggests. So it's important that we get people to participate around that conversation and be a part of the sort of group effort to sustain this resource long term.
Well, Ian, thanks for taking the time. Obviously, this is super complex stuff. We're going to be having several more conversations with Seneca Lake Pure Waters, and we got a few other shows planned throughout the remainder of the summer. But appreciate you taking the time to come in and talk to us.
Thanks for having me.